Ghost to Ghost 07, you're on a ride, all right, and you just never know when it's going to end. Remember, folks, we're doing unscreened ghost stories from you, all of you. So one story per caller. Please try not to use a cell phone. Get to a corded phone if you can, and only the very scariest stories. If it didn't scare you, it's very unlikely to scare us. Back with more in a moment. Remember, turn your radio off right away when I pick up. Here's a ghost story from an emergency room in Arizona. Art, I'm an X-ray technician who was working at an Arizona hospital back in the winter of 2006. My work hours at the time, 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. graveyard shift, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. On a Saturday morning, around 1 or 2 in the morning, the ER called to tell my partner that an ambulance was en route with a 50 to 60-year-old male patient that was non-responsive with a thready pulse. We were to stand by and be ready to do a portable chest X-ray post-trachea intubation. When the time came, my partner went to do this portable X-ray, leaving me alone in the X-ray control room not more than 4 or 5 minutes after he had left. An older white male dressed in faded blue jeans and a stained white T-shirt came to the door of the control room. Now, this is a difficult task because you need an electronic card key to access the area at this time of night. So I looked up from my paperwork, noticed this man, and asked, "Sir, can I help you?" He seemed to be looking for something or someone, but didn't answer. I asked again, "Sir, can I help you? Are you looking for someone? Are you lost?" This time, he raised his bright blue eyes in my direction and seemed to look right through me. The man said, "No, son, I think I've found my way." He gave me a sad smile, shook his head, and moved from the doorway toward the direction of the ER. So I got up and went to the open door and looked down the long hallway, didn't see anyone. I then checked the adjoining hallways, the two X-ray suites, even our file room, no trace of anybody. Being a little confused, I went back down the hall to the ER department to check on my coworker's progress, shaking my head the whole way. When I finally got to the nurse's desk, I asked an RN friend if she'd seen the man I described. She gave me a funny look, said he was in trauma room 1, where my partner was supposed to be performing the emergency chest X-ray. I went to the trauma room door, walked in, just in time to see the physician declare the time of death on the man I saw in the X-ray control room not more than 15 minutes prior. Needless to say, I must have looked like the one who was white as a ghost. Robbie from Phoenix, Arizona. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. This is Beverly from Dayton, Ohio.
Hi, Beverly.
Yes, I would like to share one of my spooky moments.
Go right ahead.
Well, back in the mid-70s, when The Exorcist first came out, my husband and I bought a home, and it was in the country in a lovely setting, and the newness of the home, every evening when I was fixing supper, the basement door would open up.
All by itself.
All by itself. And I thought, well, maybe it's just the settling of the house and the change of the season. And but night after night, the door would open right around the same time. And then my son, he would say that there was something that was coming into his room, and it was scary.
Oh.
Yeah. And, of course, you dismiss these types of activities because it's a new home. And then one evening, my husband and I were asleep, and we both had a vision or a dream at the same time. We saw our daughter being raised up out of her bed and slammed to the floor.
My God. And you both had this dream at the same moment?
At the same moment, and the whole house shook, and we flew up out of bed and ran to her room, and there she was on the floor, but she was sound asleep and unharmed, and we knew then we had an entity in the home.
What did you do? Did you remain in that home?
Well, eventually I did move out, but we got holy water. I threw away my book, The Exorcist.
I don't know what I'd do. I doubt that I'd remain in the home. I'd get buckets of holy water. I'm not sure what I would do.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that people with knowledge how to release demons or entities recommended blessing each room with holy water. And then they said a lot of times there might be a new toy or something that you've brought in the home because these entities like to hide in objects.
Yes.
There was one particular teddy bear that was fairly new, and it was handmade. That was a gift to my daughter. And I never felt comfortable with this teddy bear. So my husband, when I had mentioned that to him, he instantly grabbed the teddy bear, threw it in the fireplace.
My goodness. Teddy bears, dolls, it's not been a good night for toys.
Really? But the unusual thing, you would think by handmade stuffed teddy bear, it would be consumed in just a few minutes. It took hours for this teddy bear to burn. And the fire would dance from eye to eye back and forth.
I'd be so out of that house. Oh my God.
Well, in a few months, I did leave. The children and I, we vacated. We found another place to live.
Oh, that'd be it. I'll tell you, if we had dual dreams, went in, found our daughter on the floor, that would be it right there. But
yeah.
Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you so much.
Take care. That's a freaky one. Can you imagine that, having a dual dream about your daughter raising up out of the bed and being slammed to the floor and then going in the other room and finding her, albeit asleep, on the floor? God. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Excuse me. I was drinking. I wasn't expecting to pick up. Drinking orange juice got stuck.
Okay.
Hi there.
Hi.
I got a good one for you.
Fire away.
Okay. My family owned a funeral home, and I actually really didn't think of it as a ghost story until I thought about it, but I really didn't believe in ghosts. And about 3 years into my career, done plenty of removals, went to plenty of hospitals, been in plenty of morgues, been in plenty of homes. But this one peculiar situation came up where we were actually hired to remove a man from a hospital who was being frozen, cryonics. I don't know how familiar you are with that, but...
I know about the procedure, sure.
And, so I was on death watch that night. He was actually close to death for 3 days. And it was just a matter of waiting for him to take his last breath for the doctor to actually pronounce him, and then they give him the lethal shot of barbiturates and hook him up to a respirator, a heart-lung respirator, which actually pounds on his chest. Well, we did that, and not even thinking anything of it. We did the removal. I put him on the gurney, strapped in the gurney. This machine's pumping.
If I might, let me stop you for a second. I don't quite understand the procedure. In other words, the doctor pronounces him dead.
Correct.
Okay, but then he's given a lethal shot.
A lethal injection of barbiturates.
Why would that be necessary?
Well, from my understanding, because the heart-lung machine is put on almost immediately after he's pronounced dead.
Okay, all right. Okay.
And I asked the same question. I mean, I'm thinking the same thing, but I'm not really thinking this until about what I'm about to tell you actually happens.
Sure.
Anyways, I put him in the car. He's in the gurney. We're in the station wagon. The machine's pumping in the back, and I, turn on the radio, and I'm just driving along. All of a sudden, in my mind, I hear like kind of a moan, and I look in the rearview mirror, and I shook my head and said, no. And then again, I heard this, where are we going? And I look in the rearview mirror, and it was kind of like a ghostly image, but it was like I turn around, and it's not there, but I see him actually sit up. And I turned around, and I shook my head. I said, no. I said, this is in my head. And I turned the radio up. And as I turned the radio up, it got louder. Where are we going? And I pulled the car over. I put it in park, and I said, and I turned the radio off. I said, you've got to be kidding me.
Like, right.
And no, I said it out loud. I said, you have got to be kidding me. I said, I've been doing this for 3 years. And I said, I do one thing that is different, and can you hear me talking? He goes, yeah, where are we going?
My God.
I said, well, we're going to the funeral home. He goes, no, we're not supposed to go to the funeral home. I said, where are we supposed to go? He goes, I'm supposed to just wake up and be well again. I said, wow. I said, this is wrong what we're doing. He goes, well, what have I done? And I explained it to him. I'm sitting there in the car talking.
So you're having a full conversation with a dead man.
Well, you know, that's going through my head. I was like, well, is he dead?
If you're having that kind of conversation.
I'm sorry?
If you're having that kind of conversation, I'd be turning around or something. I mean.
I did. I turned around. Every time I would turn around.
I don't mean turn around in the car. I mean turn around and head back to the hospital. If you're having that kind of conversation with somebody, anyway, you go ahead, sir.
No, I know it was. It wasn't with him in his physical body, though.
Uh huh.
Because in the mirror, I could see him sit up, and I can visually, you know, see him. But when I turned around, the machine's just going. But the weird thing was, is I didn't feel fear. You know, I thought, as I look back, I said, I should have been running out of the car screaming and yelling.
Yeah.
But this guy, and I knew this guy was stuck because he realized, and I realized, I felt horrible because we got paid a lot of money just to put this machine on this guy and then bring him back to the funeral home, pack him in ice and put him in an ambulance to be put into nitrogen. Right. And the thing is I actually had to coerce him to go, because he was going to stay. He was going to stay in the funeral home. And my dad, I really haven't told this story to anybody, but my dad asked me, he goes, what's wrong with you? I said, what we did tonight was wrong. I said, this man is, what he's expecting of this cryonics is not, I know for sure is not going to work. And he's stuck. He was stuck.
Obviously, this man thought it was going to work.
Yes, he did. And he was going to stay. He was hanging out at the funeral home when the ambulance took off. I said, "You can't stay here."
Well,
I don't know.
How did you finish up the conversation with the man?
I'm sorry.
How did you finish up the conversation with the man?
With telling him that he must go with his body in the ambulance, and he needs to figure out his path. I mean, it was weird, but I told him that he couldn't. I've never dealt with anything like this before. He couldn't stay with me. It wasn't like he wanted to stay with me. He was stuck. It was like traumatic for him.
That'd be the last body I'd ever drive.
but it was freaking. That was the last cryonics situation we put ourselves into.
That's an amazing story. Just absolutely amazing. And how you kept your cool through that, I'll never know.
It was strange because I didn't, in my mind, and throughout my career, I had actually put it out of my mind. I said, you know what? There's got to be no such thing as ghosts because I deal with bodies every day, fresh death in situations, and I've never, ever, anything. And when I heard him say, where are we going? And I saw him sit up in the rearview mirror. I pulled over and I said, you've got to be kidding me.
I hear you. All right, sir. I really appreciate the story. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, maybe there's something different about the expectation of a spirit that was, frankly, expecting to wake up in good health. In other words, he was expecting to be cryonically frozen and to wake up one day in the far future healthy and probably wealthy if he had good investments. But instead, he woke up on the way to the cryonics lab, neither here nor there. That is a freaky story. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, Art, how's it going?
It's getting very interesting, sir. Go right ahead.
Okay, I guess you could call it a haunted house story. There was a farmhouse near where I grew up, big old house, and dated back to like the 1800s. But people had lived there on and off up to like the 1970s, and then it was vacant, and it was kind of set back on a dirt road, and we were teenagers, and back in the early 80s, and we went there one night, and it was a big old house, and it wasn't really dilapidated or run down. It was just nobody had lived there for a while,
mm-hmm.
and I'd been there a couple times, and I was showing my friends around, and There was six of us. It was three boys and three girls. And two of the boys, two friends of mine, were farm boys. And down in the basement of this place was an old, beat-up, broken-down old antique tractor. And they were down there looking at it. And me and the three girls were upstairs, and I was showing them. This place was pretty big, and it had, like, some old servants' quarters, which I thought was kind of neat. And I was showing them that. And so we were in the second floor, and all of a sudden we heard this huge noise, big kaboom, smash, bang. Something was going down the stairs, obviously. And we ran out to look, and something or someone had thrown the toilet from the second floor bathroom down the stairs.
Wow.
Now, we didn't hear it getting ripped out of the floor or anything. It was bolted into the floor. I remember that. You know, there was no water, of course, hooked up. But while we were up there, something had torn that toilet out of the floor, carried it down the hall past us. You know, we didn't hear anything, and threw it down the stairs.
And anything that could rip a toilet, bolted in right out of the floor and then throw it down the stairs is nothing to be trifled with.
Right. And like I said, you know, when it... We didn't hear it getting torn out of the floor or anything like that. We just heard it go down the stairs, you know, about 5 feet away from us. We were in like...
Boom, 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 yeah.
And the kids from the basement came running up, and the girls, of course, they wanted to light out of there as quick as could be. And I'll tell you what, I was the first one out the door myself.
I was going to say, when it comes to that kind of thing, there's not a lot of difference between guys and gals.
No, well, we can run faster, and I'll tell you what, I ran the fastest that night.
That's an awful... And so this thing was just sitting at the bottom of the steps, and that's when you took off. Well, for once, I agree. I would have done the exact same thing.
Hey, happy Halloween, Art.
Well, happy Halloween to you, sir. All right. Art, in the mid-90s, we sold our rural home, moved into a small town of about 6,000 people. We rented a quaint little house located beside a small church and graveyard in the center of town. We moved in 1 week before Halloween. Our four children were eager to decorate for the occasion and decked out the house and yard, including headstones on the lawn and a hangman's noose, which was suspended from a large willow tree beside the front door, including a very realistic dead man. We bought tons of goodies in anticipation of the throngs of ghouls that would visit that night. Halloween Eve came and went without one ghoul racing our door, even though we observed dozens of them greedily shuffling from door to door across the street. By midnight, we were feeling a bit rejected, very rejected, turned in for the night, only to be awakened by a blood-curdling scream coming from downstairs. I rushed to the stairs to find our 11-year-old daughter trembling in fear and staring up at something. I glanced up to see a hangman's noose suspended from seemingly nothing. It hung there a few seconds and then fell to the stairs, totally freaking us all out. Needless to say, no one got any sleep that night. The next day, I found what everyone else obviously already knew. Apparently, we were living in the old church rectory in which a former pastor of the neighboring church had hung himself. That's from Eileen in Alberta, Canada. So, as you can readily see, whether it be a layman or a priest, if the death comes in an unseemly way, a suicide, or in some unexpected quick way, perhaps a body to be frozen forevermore and then awakened one day, healthy, wealthy, if not wise, look out, folks. Isn't it fascinating? We all hope, even pray, that there's a life after this one. And yet, we don't seem all that thrilled when we hear or see evidence of it. Has that ever occurred to you? We'll be right back. The following is from Elizabeth in Morris Plains, New Jersey. My mother and I had to stay with my grandparents during World War II. My father was drafted when I was 9 months old, and he didn't come home till I was just about five. My grandfather owned and he managed a funeral home. On the first floor of a very large Victorian mansion, Mom and I lived on the third floor, along with an aunt and an uncle who was in the Air Force stationed locally so he could come home for the weekends. My grandparents' apartment was the entire second floor, along with my youngest aunt. Grandpa told me when I was very young that, quote, these people are nice folks. They wouldn't hurt you. They wouldn't have hurt you when you were alive, and they won't do so now. I said, okay. And I was confident he told me the truth, at least until I was about 11. I made the usual walk through the casket showroom where an older man was getting readied for his family's visit. I felt all the hair on my head and body standing straight up, and I just knew that man was staring at me. I did a bit of whistling as I dashed out of the room and tore up the stairs to the safety of my grandmother. That night, I awoke in the very early morning hours, and there he was, standing at the foot of my bed, staring right at me. I took a deep breath and slowly pulled the covers over my head. I did not go to sleep. My ears were on super sensitive settings all night, waiting for him to make his move. It was completely terrifying. I could barely breathe, and my heart was pounding. His funeral was held at 10 o'clock in the morning, and they finally dragged his sorry ass to the cemetery. I have never in my life been so terrified. Now I'm 64 years of age. I've always wondered what his problem was. I've got a theory. He was a child molester who couldn't figure out how to work with his new situation, death. I hope he stays planted. My second floor bed was directly above his first floor casket. I would never again, never agree to sleep over another soul who had passed over. Too risky. Well, Cardline, you're on the air.
Hi, George. How are you tonight?
Pretty good, but I'm not George.
Oh, sorry. I mean, Art.
It's an understandable mistake. Go right ahead.
Okay, George. Art. Well, I am living in Austin, Texas right now. My name is Jessica, and I am from Victoria, BC, Canada, originally. And my story is about there. A couple years ago, I was going to art school, and had a part-time job at a grocery store. And a part of our art lessons were to go out into various parts of Victoria and, like, draw buildings and such things like that. So one field trip we had, we went to a grave site, and we started drawing, you know, tombstones and stuff. So I remember I sat down. Sorry, I'm older. Anyways, I sat down and I started drawing this tombstone, and this lady, it was a lady's name on there.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I started drawing it, and that's not the whole story. But a couple weeks later, I'm working at the grocery store, and I was pretty much the only one there. It was a really small grocery store, and I'm sitting there with another cashier, and in walks this lady. And I can't see her because I have my back to the door. But the other cashier that I was working with, like, we're talking, blah, blah. And she looks at me like she was so freaked out. So I turn around and I look and I see this weird lady with this long black dress on. I'm totally not lying. She was wearing this long black dress, long, straggly hair, gross-looking skin, like grayish tone. And, like, I'm an artist, so I can tell, like, people's skin tones. Anyways, she freaked me out so much. Like, that was not what regular people looked like. So I screamed and ran away. That was, like, my first instinct was to just scream and run away. I couldn't believe it. And once I realized that I had screamed and ran away from this lady that I'm supposed to help, like, I'm in a grocery store, I realized this, I went back and said, I composed myself, and I said, can I help you? And she's like, I don't know where I am, like, in this really creepy voice. So I was, like, so freaked out by this lady. I looked at her, and I was really close, and her eyes looked like they were just held up by toothpicks. Like, it was, like, bugging out of her face. And I said, you don't know where you are? Let me call you a cab. So I said, what's your name? And she said, it's Elizabeth. And just a couple weeks earlier, when I was drawing this tombstone, I remember what the name of that lady was, and there were fresh flowers there, and it looked like it was a fairly fresh grave, and that name was Elizabeth. And I was so freaked out by this lady. Like, she did not look like she was walking. She looked like she was floating, like she had no footsteps at all, and just, like, shook me up so much. And it's been, like, 5 years, and I still get creeped out when I think about her.
Maybe by drawing that tombstone, you essentially called Elizabeth.
I have no idea, but I do know that Victoria, where I'm from in Canada, in the whole Pacific Northwest up there, is really, really big on witchcraft. And, like, I don't know if I had just seen, you know, that parallel between the living and the dead, but that person that I saw that, like, hovered at me was not human. And I don't really tell that story very much because, like, you know, obviously I don't think people are going to take me seriously, but my first instinct, and I heard you were talking about this earlier, Art, was to scream and run. And I did. And I don't do that with people who are living and alive, you know?
I hear you. All right. Thanks for the story. I really appreciate it. You know, if something like that happened to me, if an obviously dead person was in front of me, floating in front of me with gray skin, eyes that just didn't look, I don't know, human, alive human, I'd scream. I'd run. I'm sure I would. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art. That's right from Houston, Texas.
Yes, sir. In a truck, I bet, right?
I'm a trucker. It's the best I can do, but I've got a good story.
Okay.
All right. I was staying with acquaintances of acquaintances in Atlanta, Georgia, a few years back on a business trip, and I rented a room from them. And one night I was calling my girlfriend back in Texas, and the line kind of went dead. And when she came back on, she said, "Well, I think there was a demon on the line or something. I couldn't hear you, and I rebuked it." And I was like, "Well, man, that's strange. I never heard her say anything like that before." But then I hung up the phone, turned over to go to sleep, and I started hearing, and I was the only one in the house this night. Everybody was gone. Started hearing kind of voices from the basement. It's like if you've ever been on a lake on a calm day and you can hear somebody kind of across the water, but you can't understand what they're saying.
Sure, it carries very well.
Exactly. And so the strange noise from downstairs is, and then I start hearing the stairs creak, and slowly something's coming up the stairs. So I'm like freaking out. You know, my bedroom doors are shut, and I can still hear this. And this entity comes somewhere into my proximity. I don't ever see it manifest, but my skin's crawling. I feel like a Shar-Pei dog. And my hair's standing on end. And all I can do from my background is I'm thinking, I pray. So I start praying. And after a few minutes, it seems to have left. But I'm still, like, totally freaking out and so forth. To get to the end of the story, this house, I had no idea, was haunted because this this entity evidently had something to do with the, there was an incident there in Atlanta, Georgia, where a minister at Straight Lace Church had a gay lover, and he killed the lover in the basement of the house. So there was some really strange energy going around, and I got the experience that what was left over.
Anyway, all right, sir. I appreciate your story. Thank you. But that's why we're not doing cell phones. It's very, very difficult to understand a lot of cell phones. And while they're fine for emergency communications and things like that, for telling ghost stories, they're not so good. Wildcard Line, you're on the air.
Hi, Art. This is Carl from Milwaukee.
How you doing?
Good. This involves my wife and her family. I had met her in high school. And for a while, I went on a road, and when I came back, I met up with her again, and her father passed away, and like most of her family members, I guess, he had his body donated to medical science. And 2 years after we got married and moved into this house here, I have a dream. And in the dream, we're in the cemetery. And I don't know how I knew it was her dad, because I really don't have a lot of recollection about what he looked like or sounded like, but I knew it was him, and I asked, "What are you doing here?" And he says, "I'm looking for my body." That's when I woke up. And when I woke up, I was even more scared because I couldn't move. And I called up I barely was able to call up my wife's name twice. And the next morning, I was kind of miffed at her because, you know, she didn't answer me. And I asked her, did you hear me call you? And she said, yes, I did. And I said, why didn't you reply? She says, because you sounded like my father.
Mm. Well, that's pretty strange, all right.
I don't know if, I have two explanations. I mean, I have narcolepsy, and people who have narcolepsy also have what's called cataplexy, which is paralysis. Now, which one might have altered my voice, or it could be supernatural. I don't know.
It could have been. It could have been some kind of sleep paralysis, or your body could have been taken over. In other words, one could go with the other, paralyzed, and then the voice that came from you was indeed not yours. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello?
Yes, I'm back, Art.
Yes?
Yes, I have a story to tell you.
Okay, this is your first call?
Yes, sir.
Okay, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Los Angeles.
L.A., and you're on a cell phone too, aren't you?
Yes, I am, sir.
Okay, well, we'll see how it goes. Go ahead.
Okay, fine. This happened when I was about 21 years old. I had just been back from Vietnam, and I was staying with my grandmother for one day a week. She was about 87, 88 years old, and would take her to church one day a week, and everyone in the family would volunteer one day. So that night, I'm sleeping in my uncle's bed. This was the heir apparent to my grandmother's estate, who died prematurely. He was going to inherit a great deal of money, and unfortunately, he died at 59 of pneumonia. I'm laying in his bed in my grandmother's home, and I was very emotional because I really missed this man. He treated me like his son. And I said a little prayer. I said, Uncle, I miss you with all my heart, and I would give anything to have you back again. And as I was falling asleep in this dark room, all of a sudden the light, a great light engulfed the room where the light permeated my eyes, even though they were closed.
Right.
Like the sun had come into the room, and simultaneously the sound of chimes, or a ringing sound of latis or chimes, suddenly became apparent, and I was terrified, absolutely terrified. I had never been so scared in all my life. Possibly in Vietnam was the only other time, and I opened up my eyes for a split second, and there's a piece of paper floating in the air. And I said, oh, my God. I said, I know I'm not imagining this. This is real. And I jumped out of the bed, ran out of the bed to the next room, turned on the light, and my heart is jumping up and down. And my grandmother comes hobbling in from her bedroom with a cane and says, Andrew, what's wrong? And I said, Grandma, I just had a terrifying dream. She said, turn the light on and sleep with the light on. It's going to be okay. So I go back to the room. On the floor is a piece of paper, and on the paper is handwriting that I asked several of my aunts and uncles, and they said it was my uncle's handwriting. He had been dead for about 6-7 months.
And what was written there?
That's a good question. It was his doodling. He would doodle on paper, you know, like nothing that you make sense out of.
Okay, but it nevertheless was his handwriting, and you saw that paper in midair.
I swear to Almighty God, I saw it floating in the air, touching the ground. That's when I knew I wasn't dreaming. I knew, and the sound of chimes. And by the way, I had heard one other story.
Okay, well, we've got to keep it to one story per customer, but that was a good one. And I am convinced that if people who pass away really have a strong enough will to do something, they can do it. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, I was calling in to tell a ghost story.
Okay, I'm hearing clicking on the line.
I just turned off the radio.
Okay, again, I'm hearing a lot of clicking. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from my house in San Francisco, California.
San Francisco, okay.
I'm taking it upstairs where the receiver is. I was calling to tell him this story about this place I used to live in. It was in San Jose.
Okay, I'm going to have to pass on this one. You're going to have to try and get reconnected. That was a very bad clicking sound. First-time caller line, you're on the air.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
I guess I'm a first-time and probably a last-time caller as well.
Really?
Well, I was going to tell you, it was in the mid-80s. I was quite a youngster. My brother and I were a couple troublemakers. Being from Idaho, you can guess that we're kind of like hicks in a stick. We thought we'd scare some people with the Ouija board. We had a Halloween party, and along with the bobbing for apples. Have you ever tried to bob for apples?
Oh, sure.
It's pretty tough. But anyway, we decided to get a Ouija board and scare our friends. So I had quite a good memory. I remembered pretty near every number I've ever dialed on a phone back then.
Mm-hmm.
And so my brother was going to make the noises, the ghost noises, and I was going to recall these numbers to prove that the Ouija board would work.
Okay.
So we had quite a few skeptics in the room, you know, being teenagers and what, and, you know, they asked the question, well, what's the phone number for the theater? Of course, I knew it from memory, dramatically moved the Ouija board around with my friends and came up with the right numbers. And the head skeptic, Jim, had a phone book there. He was verifying the numbers.
Uh-huh.
And I had to stretch my mind quite a few times, remembering things like the grocery store, et cetera, et cetera. But I got them all right.
Uh-huh.
And my brother, he would slip off in the other room and would make some different types of noises. And I'm telling you, Art, I really had to choke back the laughter a few times because I'd look at people's faces and they were as white as ghosts. And, you know, because they would hear the combination of hearing the noise mm-hmm. he was making and my numbers that I was getting. Well, anyways, we heard a blood-curdling scream. And we jumped up. I jumped up. You know, I couldn't believe my brother made that noise. We rushed in, and here my brother was speechless. And I was very shocked. You know, I couldn't figure out what had happened. And I gave him a wink, and he gave me a wink back, and everything seemed to be okay. He joined us back in the room, took the phone book, and I did another number. Well, this time, Jim, the skeptic, asked me a number that I had no way of knowing, a women's lingerie shop that was local to the town here.
Yeah.
How am I going to remember that?
We're almost out of time, so end it quickly.
Well, anyways, I just made a number up out of the clear blue. As it turns out, the next day, my brother verified that was the correct number in the book. I thought he was pulling a prank on me and agreeing with it, but as it turns out, that was true. The number was true.
There, you've got it, sir. The Ouija board, unfortunately, worked.